hear me?
You're rolling right now.
Yeah, am I coming through? I haven't actually listened. I don't usually use the headsets when I do a kind of an interview, like with a Joe Rogan or somebody like that. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
What happens is if you use, I'm going to put the headsets on right now. Hold on a second. Now watch, immediately calamity strikes. Watch. This is what we call a Jamaican road flare, or I'm sorry, a Humboldt County road flare. This is called a Oaxacan door jam, this joint, okay? And you can use it for whatever. If you're in Jamaica and you're on vacation and, you got your girlfriend on the back of a Vespa, it's a rented Vespa.
Yeah.
It's, at my age, it could be a rented girlfriend. I see the look, even with my sunglasses. Welcome back to the Roth Show.
Roth Show.
We never left. Don't change the channel. We're on all of those, too. There's a little bit of Dave and every motherfucker out there. All right. And the Vespa inevitably breaks down. Inexplicably, it breaks down. Try and say that after three hits off of the medical. And this is what I'm going to be full explanation here. It would be like, I want workout tips from Keith Richard. That's who I want to know. How do you write that many songs? How do you do that many road tours and that many air miles and everything and still smoke four packs of red and white cowboy cigarettes a day? Marlboro used to be a woman's cigarette. And then the guy, I think it was in the 50s, Life magazine, he said, now we're going to recharge this into, cowboys and Indians. And cowboys and Indians is about authentic. Tom, what do we watch? Okay, watch how I'm going to multitask. I'm going to ask you a question that requires at least three sentences worth of response so that I can light up the flare and get us some help on this flat tire for the Vespa. Here we go, Tom. What do we watch in the studio at Henson as we're putting the boom in the room with the Van Halen tunes? Take your time.
We watch PBR, professional bull riding.
Describe that if you would.
In my experience, it is a moderately delusional person getting on top of a wild bull that does not want that person on top of them, and they open a gate, and the bull starts to jump all over the place and spin around, and sometimes the guy stays on, and sometimes he doesn't stay on.
Okay.
And when he gets knocked off, it's pretty funny.
All right. That's an explanation that comes from somebody who has literally a Sigmund Freud beard, an ultra-high-tech brain, and a Salvador Dali painting as a tattoo on his arm. Am I accurate here?
Okay. Very accurate.
Okay. What he's trying to get at. It's one hell of a powwow. I want to tell you that's 1,800 pounds of fuck you right back trying to throw your ass. And like they say in bull riding, don't get thrown. Don't get thrown. It's everything that's great and everything that's crazy about America in one single throw. Like fried chicken. Think about that one, right?
Sure.
Everything that's worth winning wars over and everything that'll probably kill you before you accomplish that. Okay? Bull riding is the exact same thing. Because if you're going to ride a bull for 8 full seconds, all right, you would dress more like hockey gear, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah.
You would have elbow, knee pads, suit of armor. You'd have the helmet, the mouthpiece. You'd have knees, hips, tailbone. You'd have ankles. You'd walk in there somewhere between Tom Brady and Wayne Gretzky. And and that would save you because inevitably, even the winner of the full event ends in a full, almost fatal car crash. Right?
Yeah.
Even the winner limps out of that ring. But no, what do we wear? We wear a straw cowboy hat, skin-tight jeans, and spurs. Just think about that one. Jump down off of the stairway and whoa, there you go. I don't know what you call that maneuver. The Roth Show, full disclosure, I'm not really an athlete. Okay, I do some athletic things. In fact, the most athletic thing I do these days is shoot the curb. Do you know what that means, Tom?
I don't.
Try not to. Why about when you gonna shoot the curb? And the chorus is, bust your buns now, bust your buns now. Skateboarding with me, Jan and Dean. You'll play it in the background as we roll. And he goes, try not to wipe out as you go to shoot the curb. It's when you shoot off of the curb on your skateboard, endangering life, limb, and inviting the EMTs back into your life for the umpteenth time. Spectacular crashes. Spectacular. Don't pick it. It'll never heal. You remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
Knees and elbows. Those were badges of honor. It showed that you went over 20 miles an hour. Eight wheels and... that was roller skates. Eight wheels and a bank track. That's roller derby. We'll have to get into that. It's a little closer to my career. Bull riding is actually a little closer to my career. But here's the best one. You know what a buckle bunny is?
I do.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's got their own groupies.
Yeah.
And a buckle bunny, it means that if you won the gold buckle or the big buckle. But think about this. What other sport would wedge yourself right down onto an 1,800-pound animal without stirrups or saddle and put a razor-sharp teacup-sized belt buckle right above your dick? Doesn't take a Sigmund Freud beard figure out. It takes a real pair for that on both ends of the steer. Welcome back to the Roth Show. Don't get thrown.
Roth Show.
Went to the dentist the other day and they gave me the knockout. The original anesthesia, I think, was the giant hammer like Elmer Fudd style. But these days you get the drip or whatever. I had to have a tooth pulled. And doctor turns to me and he goes, oh my God, is this? And I go, yeah, it's usual. My heart rate is 50. I don't know what yours is. Average would probably be about 70. And it's all legs and lungs. I hate the idea of athletics. I hate the idea of sports. I hate sports are for kids or eternal kids. Athletics, the only athletic thing I do is shoot the curb regularly. But I've always had something that I could maintain that had virtually no connotation to homework. Jack LaLanne, having to show up. Obligation. First day I walked into the karate dojo, I asked one of the senior black belts, how long does it take? What does it take to get a black belt here? He said, oh, it'd take about 7 or 8 years for you. I said, okay, what do I have to do? He says, you don't have to do anything. All I got to do is get yourself to the door and I'll take it from there. Whoa. The distance to that door and getting yourself schlepped to that door. It starts with the Sealy Posturepedic and the impossible. I've climbed some pretty high things, up to, I don't know, 25,000 feet kind of a thing. And the distance from the top of my Sealy Posturepedic mattress to that hardwood floor, it only looks like 3 feet, Tom, but it's about 30,000 some mornings. It's the same perilous. Remember jumping between two bunk beds with either your sisters or your brothers or your cousins screaming, hot lava, like you were going to fall into the middle of that. The distance from the top of your mattress to that hardwood floor can feel like you're Alex Honnold on the last 13 moves of El Cap, which, by the way, I recommend. In fact, you got us the full surround goggles. What do you call those, actually?
VR goggles. They're Meta, the company, I believe, is that makes
That's
them.
Knockout stuff. The Alex Honnold material I'm talking about is when he's climbing freestyle, I think in the Dolomites, such. Jimmy Chin produced it, and 3 times I walked accidentally into the wrong table of the console. We were looking at it in the studio as we were mixing the Van Halen material. I can't wait to see porno. I know everybody says that, but then from that you move to violence. I want to be right in the middle of the ring at WWE, or I want to be right in the middle of that beach when Tom Hanks and the guys come pouring out of those amphibious vehicles into World War II and saving Private Ryan, right?
Yeah.
I just heard the best. Somebody said it to Steven Spielberg during an interview because he has a new movie out, Saving the Fablemans or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the Fablemans. Mm-hmm. And somebody said to him, are you aware of the porno industry that makes a parody of the names of titles of, you know, the Munsters and the Addams Family, and they play games with the titles? He said, yeah, I'm aware of the existence of it, he said, but I'm not terribly connected to it. And she says to him, well, John Waters, who produced or directed Pink Flamingos, he's a noted director and producer, and he's a personality, and he's a wit, and a contributor to the culture, said that his favorite parody of a movie title for a porno was Shaving Ryan's Privates. and Spielberg exploded. God bless him. He went full root beer. You know, like when you're at the Dairy Queen and you're 12 years old and you laugh so hard the root beer comes out your nose and you hate it, but it's kind of sweet anyway because it's a full root beer. Spielberg, he said, no, I was completely unaware of that right up to this very second. He said, but that's pretty good. He gave it a left-hand salute. He's a mensch. Spielberg, you're a mensch. Speaking of mensches, Howard Stern, tell me if you agree, Tom should be in the Hall of Fame. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I don't mean the producer-director part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, he should be right up front with the rest of us here because he's a performer. And he's got one of the most difficult performing jobs ever. You know, most singers in rock bands will tell you that the most difficult part of the job live is talking in between the songs. Ask James Hetfield, for example, in Metallica. I'm sure he'll tell you that the singing comes way easier than to what to say, at what time, when, in between the songs, especially if you're being very, very right now, if it's not rehearsed. He'll tell you, in between the songs, most difficult part of the whole show. And that's all Howard does. He never actually does songs. Now, my mom used to tell me, full disclosure, Dave, I think it's more popular when you don't sing. I said, what do you mean? She said, in between when you're talking. I think people like it when you're talking better than when you sing. I said, so you're telling me that if I just don't sing at all and just do more talking, I could charge more. She said, absolutely. I said, so what if I stop rehearsing? And I could charge more for that too, right? And it could spiral. I forget the routine. It's a Groucho routine. We'll cut this part. No, actually, it's funny when Dave drives right into the fucking wall. That's a Howard Stern humor moment. Howard belongs in the Hall of Fame. He's got one of the most difficult jobs ever. Makes it look spontaneous. That's the part. That's the fun part of it. Robin is in there. I think Garfunkel always had the better name, always had the better haircut. And Simon was great, but he's better with. And the E Street Band is the legend. Bruce, your marvelous solo. Oh, thank you, Dave. It's okay, Bruce. But the E Street Band is the legend. So you got Batman and Robin in there. And Howard's a performer. He's presented music in a way that 4 Bill Grahams and 3 Ronnie Delzners can only dream of to millions and millions of people. And it's his taste in his vinyl record collection, which is incarnates part of his constitution, clearly. And it is his judgmental ears, he's the chef, who stands at the door and makes enemy after enemy going, no, no, there. We sit in the studio and we go through that together, right, Tom? That's what we're doing with Van Halen.
Yeah.
Putting the boom in the room when Maverick turns to Goose and goes, I feel the need for speed. I'm in the mood for some boom in the room. And you got to stand at the door when we start MIDI-ing multiple instrumental digital interfacer. I think that's what we ordered for lunch. You're vegetarian? I think that's the app we used for ordering the vegetarian. I think the kid who delivered the barbecue is a vegetarian. It's endless. And I'm riffing. And you know what? I guess if you hear a little bit of Howard in my own riffing tone, I've been a lifelong fan. So I have that bias. If I'm not the first one to say it, I want to be the next one to say it even louder. Let's do this right, guys. Don't Charlie Chaplin this guy. Do it right now so his wife and his kids can take a peek at what happens when he goes up on that stage. And everybody will assemble, and he can make a list of his favorite song if McCartney's in town. Play me this Beatles song. I suggest Hard Day's Night. That's just my choice.
Roth Show.
We're up here in the Mojo Dojo treehouse.
Yeah.
We got to cut rations a little bit, not on the rum or the tobacco. I saw the look even with my sunglasses. We're broadcasting to you from high in the basement of the Mojo Dojo here in Pasadena. And we were in Henson, and we go back and forth. Henson is the ultimate epicentric street corner for musical studios today, at least on this side of the Rockies. Yes or no?
Absolutely.
You know your way around that. Mm-hmm. That studio, the way I used to know my way around a prom queen's thighs. Although your studio experience probably isn't quite as risky. Certainly today. Musically, though.
Musically, yes.
It's everybody from McCartney to Metallica and Mariah and me. And Jesus, that's just the M&Ms, right?
Yeah.
It's quite an experience, quite an inspiring experience to be there. And as many of us have noticed here, we took the Van Halen tunes. What you're hearing essentially is the show that never actually did happen. I didn't get to retire. Just when I get out, they pull me back in. I really did mean to retire. I mean, Rocky's, I should be in the middle of my third retirement now, according to the Rocky bibliography. How many times did Rocky retire? 6, 7 times?
Yeah.
Then he was a coach twice.
Yeah.
Right? And James Bond. So, nevertheless, my lower back and the Dr. Watkins surgical team says, be very careful where you play. So I can do one-offs, or I can do, back and forths. Nevertheless, what made Van Halen material very, very different than a lot of the material that was available at the time, and certainly that is available in today's reference, whether it's country or Lizzo, whether it's gospel, even bluegrass, most folks go into the studio and either play the studio, a la Pink Floyd, spending a year or a year and a half and coming out with The Wall. Great epics like Dark Side of the Moon. They went into the studio with their instruments, and it takes a year, it takes a year and a half. Folks have lives, they have families, they have small but manageable drinking problems that call for timing, especially as you get a little bit older. Once you're past those first 15 summers, and if you're lucky enough to be established, then hey, takes a while. But Van Halen, we followed a more Spartan code, literally, same as Roman legion, same as Viking, in that we simply overtrained and then overtrained the overtraining and then overtrained the overtraining, so that just like all of us listening right now, I can operate this motor vehicle at 65 to 75 miles an hour. I can change the channel from reggaeton to KLOS. I can juggle the extra large latte, Tom, that you just bought me. I can readjust the mirror so that I see how good I look while I'm getting somewhere and yell at the dog in the back to stop barking. And you guys can too. And the reason is because we've practiced it so many, 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 many times. And those of you who have kids, you can also yell at them as you're adjusting the mirror. Stop lying. You used to yell at me. Now I yell at your kids. It's ultra familiar. And when your rock band has written the songs and then practiced and trained and played and played and played, that's where your swagger comes from. The beating you took. How many goddamn miles you had to travel up that fuck shit freeway through to Sunland, to that fry in the summer, and freeze in the winter, and then duplicate it and duplicate it and duplicate it. And that's where all your swagger comes from. That's where all your savvy comes from. I never think about the millions of records we've sold. Yeah, we sold, I think, in metric, it's a shitload. How many T-shirts, especially extra larges in my generation? A truckload of a shitload. These are actual Aramaic measurements, Tom. We don't know the actual weight to weight, strength to weight ratios, but we may never know.
Right.
But how many airplays, how many Spotify's? That's not what you brag about. You brag about the beating you took on the way up, the golden years. 5 sets a night, 85 songs a night. I didn't know they were sisters. You're explaining your third back operation. Why are you here? And you're writing it all proudly, and that's the stories that we all tell. Whether the 4-star general is going to tell you about, oh, no, let me tell you about the first 3 years. I didn't know nothing. Man, there's a lot to get used to around here. Any great surgeon will tell you that. Outdoor guides. Oh, no, I almost killed my first 3 expeditions as a professional guide. Those will be your proudest moments, the struggles and the stuff you tell your girlfriends, your wives, and your kids, and then the press. Those are the golden days, working in the coal mine. Oh, man. Oh, we almost died 3 times right before lunch that day. Oh, you see, the streets were packed with Sinners on a Last Chance Power Slide. One of them almost hit me, and I was casing the promised land. And I almost went to heaven in a little rowboat. Past the guacamole.
Roth Show.
In a day of Saturday Night Fever where many of those songs were written and structured in the studio, and I use that record because it's so hyper familiar and the songs are wonderful, but they weren't written at home in an apartment and then practiced literally in a basement, the basement that's right under our feet right here, and then taken into the studio and documented, which is what Van Halen music always was. In the classic era, that's what you got. And so in order to check every now and then, every 10 years or so, people are going to ask, hey, man, how's your voice? Hey, man, how's, hey, Tom, how's your arm? He's going to hear that when he's 68. What kind of music you making? And you go into the studio and you can rev up. Every time I hear the London Symphony Orchestra do some Tchaikovsky or some Beethoven or anybody in between, simply the updating in the equipment, I'm tapping the console here, gives it a whole new shine, a whole new angle. It's like growing up and every 10 years you read Huckleberry Finn. It's an entirely new book. I understand the Bible is much the same way. That did not change, not one page of it. Not even the typeface changed. You did. We did. And you're seeing it from a different angle, different colored sunglasses, whole different positioning as a human being. The way you view something when you're broke is very different than the way you view something through a Maserati window. And hold on, let me dwell on that. Well, it depends if the window's down. And if you're still broke, because, you know, if somebody ever asks me, they say, you ever been in a car like this, Dave? I tell them, not in front.
Roth Show.
Performing the commonplace under uncommon conditions is Spartan code, but there's every high school and every city in the world has the Spartans, whether it's a college, USC, or I think Arcadia or South Pasadena has a Spartans. I think Chandler School or somebody here, and I say it with respect because they had disciplinary codes. This says over rehearse everything. Practice the shit out of everything until it's third nature. And out of that, here I come with my angle to it, is, well, how do you survive something that's austere and dry and more obligation and more homework and more having to show up and having to fly right? And like in Greece when she goes, you better shape up, which now I think is very sexy like that. You got to have to laugh to win. You got to have beginner spirit. You got to be able to laugh at it. Got to laugh at everybody else's misery, and especially your own. And you got to be able to laugh at your crappy, shitty inheritance, especially if you're poverty-stricken, which, hey, somebody else's bad luck got on me. I don't deserve that. And you have to be able to have that kind of sense of humor, or at least reach for it or try to compel it in others. And that's what Van Halen had. There's a lot of swagger in Van Halen music. Music today is very, very sport specific. If you have a lazy on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon in the California numbshine, that's Fleetwood Mac. If you're very, very angry and you're Ukrainian and you want some payback, that's Metallica. And Van Halen music is I'm the patron saint of midnights on Friday and Saturday nights when everyone was guilty. You choose Jimmy Buffett if you want the margaritas and salt water and this fine smell of women's perfume mixed with some scotch on the rocks, mixed with some the aroma of a Cuban cigar, and on and on. Van Halen music is very full contact music. It's Super Bowl music. It's racehorse music. Van Halen music is the sound of teamwork. Alternately, the Oakland Raiders of the late 70s, which is why we still wear that belligerent logo, ooh-bah, and the Harlem Globetrotters. inarguably some of the best athletes ever to throw the ball around, and they did it with a laugh to win beginner spirit. I understand the beginner spirit kicked in at 11 o'clock at night during training camp in Oakland, but those are still just allegations. We rehearsed 60 some times in order to get ready for three shows for the New Year's show that never did happen when I was attempting to retire in Las Vegas. Yeah, that was one sentence. Let it soak in for a second. 60 times. We rehearsed from, I think it was May all the way up through New Year's. And it was endless. And what you hear in the sound isn't expertise. The fellas who are playing, the three fellas that are on the track, and that's all you hear. There's no real overdubs in the band. And the whole thing was 14 songs in what, one day, basically. We do structural. Tom is doing the sound engineer and soundscape. And, you know, Tom Sarowski, also known as Podcast Tom. You look him up. You can read his credential. My idea beyond, let's see what my voice sounds like. Let's see what the spirit is. And let's take classic instruments, classic vintage gear with some really, really ardent spirits playing it and record it 4.0, hyper-ditch, super modern, beyond the curtain of space, through the trackless void, into fourth dimension. And that's what you're hearing now. Multiple instrumental digital interface with the apps, the plugins, etc. Please, it's not even happy hour. That's Tom's domain. And we played it exactly the same way you would try to play, I don't know, the book on West Side Story. You don't change much in Beethoven. And the Van Halen book, same way, same thing. If you're lucky, when you join one of our celebrity, with respect I say, orchestral ensembles, the LA Phil. It almost sounds like somebody from a street corner with a tambourine. Hey, Mr. Tambourine. Hell, you got to go find the LA Phil for that. The LA Philharmonic, New York City Philharmonic. If you're lucky, you'll play an instrument. You'll be handed over an instrument from the 1500s, 1600s, upon which the original composers actually had their instrumentalists play. It'd be the same as, okay, well, what you're hearing on our tracks here, on our latest track here, is just as when we started with Panama. Those are amps and heads, brains from 1970, 1971. Yeah. The guitars, the pickups, it's the same as being handed a cello from the 1500s when you join the LA Philharmonic. And that's what you get. There's a young lady, I brought it up before, 19-year-old young lady coming out of China, I think. She just, I think she's first viola, and one of the perks of her job with the LA Philharmonic is she gets to use and play and practice on a viola from the 1500s. The real deal. However, when we go to that concert, I can assure you, it's very modern. Microphone, very modern compression, very, Tom, you want to take over from this? Very, very modern contact mics with direct and indirect. So there's something called phasing. I don't even carry a smartphone. I was smart enough to come to you, Sarowski. How much smarter do you want me to be? You don't. Now, where's that tambourine, man?
Roth Show.
Classic, super vintage, real deal gear, recorded. Super modern, digital, 4.0, the most modern high-tech sense in recording, doesn't get any more modern, along with acknowledging the super classic. So you'll find everybody from bluegrass, and these days they call it new grass. I always giggle when I hear that. But yeah, there's a lot of 20-somethings coming out of music school who wear them bib overalls just like they did when they grew it up, except now they know now how to play modally. Well, Grandpa, when I play modal on the banjo, that's when it sounds like it don't rhyme. You get that now, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. My taste for floor, dance floor, kung fu floor, tap dance floor, wrestling floor, jujitsu floor, ballet floor, slide across the floor. It's a hardwood floor. Kendo floor. Genjutsu floor. Some people go for aerobatics. They're flying on top with a, on a bar, on the rings. Some people are reaching as they want to become aviators. They want to fly, actually fly airplanes. Tech is like climbing into the scope of a rifle, the rabbit hole. For me, it's an endless, long hardwood floor.
Roth Show.
Brian May was just knighted. Same way Elton John, perhaps Paul McCartney got knighted. A real knight of the realm. The British equivalent, perhaps, of the Kennedy Center Awards, living national treasure kind of awards, well earned, well rewarded. Right on, Brian. I know Brian from a few phone calls and having been in, Jesus, we were flavors of the week for the first time together. We've been on the same radio station for 45 years. You never really thought of it that way, but everybody transitions from she drinks Moët Chandon, and then what does she do? She dances the night away. Mm-hmm. She runs with the devil. She says to herself after a couple of those Moët Chandons, fuck it, might as well jump, hopefully. Test the deep end with both big toes right here on the Roth Show. I'm in the mood. I'm in the mood for some boom in the room.
Roth Show.
Brian May just was knighted, and he deserves it. He's one of those sounds. He described to me once in person that he built the guitar upon which every famous Queen song is written and performed with his dad. Built it by hand, and it's the same guitar throughout the entire library of his career. How cool is that? And that he built it with his dad was, that's something special. There were a number of Eddie's Frankenstein guitars, especially once they started to enlarge on the stripes design. You know the backstory there. But Brian May, same guitar, specific signature sound. When we say signature sound to folks, all of us here who aren't in the music business, which is most of us listening in right now, when we say signature sound, somebody who has the most signature sound voice would be Rod Stewart. Rod could sing happy birthday to you, and you know exactly who it is, even though you may never have heard that rendition before. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree.
Okay. Who else has signature sounds? While you're thinking of one else, St. Miles Davis's horn. When he plays it, it seems to glow. It has a warm but a tubular sound to it that, for example, Louis Armstrong has a blap that's very different. Mm. Who else has a signature sound, say, in the guitar department?
Guitar department, I would say Jimi Hendrix. All the feedback and all this, the wild sounds that would come out of his guitar is very signature.
Yes, and it would happen with just about any guitar. It's in his hands. It's right. In his sentiment. Even if he can't get the squeaks because of the incorrect amount of phasing, you can see him reaching for it. Eddie had the same thing. Mm-hmm. Same hand. You could hand him a Tonka toy, and it would sound like Eddie, even if you hadn't heard it before. Brian May's guitar, Freddie Mercury's voice, both very, very signature. And together, they make perfect. It's like peanut butter was pretty good on its own. And chocolate, you don't have to explain. And then Mr. Reese said, oh, you got to try it together. Everybody fucking good. I can imagine that there's the great-grandson of Mr. Reese, who of course invented the Reese peanut butter cup, sitting on a 600-foot mega yacht like the oligarchs have or whatever. It says Reese's Peace, P-E-A-C-E. Eddie Van Halen and I were the same thing. We went together great, even though you wouldn't think so. I was the sea salt. He was the caramel. I was the wizard. He was the spell. Or like the Japanese say, if you reverse it, maybe even the truth better tell. Classic Van Halen owes a lot to classic Queen. They're about 5-6 summers ahead of us, and we learned a number of songs that we didn't even play on stage, simply as formatted material that we could play in the basement. It was about 2 or 3 years before Eddie and I were old enough to play in the bars. So we played backyard parties and high school quads. Remember when there was a quad that you would meet at? That's like, you know, now Animal House. Okay, there's a rally at the quad. Well, Van Halen played at the quad. A lot of quads. And this was the kind of material that we would follow through. We didn't have to be commercial. We didn't have to keep the dance floor full. And a lot of Queen's, especially Brian's contributions, were very, very oblique and abstract and went off in many different directions. So I think Van Halen certainly owed a lot. And before Eddie passed, I remember I discussed with him on a couple of occasions within the last seven summers. I wonder if we gave Brian a call and said, you know what, you guys are right up on top. You're ahead of us in the age and the beauty department together. Van Halen will open for you. Let's go do stadiums together. And he and Al were very much down for that. But things change sometimes faster than you want. That's trouble with my wristwatch. It's about 20 years too fast. Who sold me this thing? So, Brian May, congratulations. A Knight of the Realm, or a Knight of the Arts and Letters, however you call that. However, all of us who wear the laurel, those of us who wear the Spartan cloak, and those of us who've become the ancient rabbi keepers of the tribal knowledge, and Tom, I think you know you're looking at one. I can't quite see you with my Persols on, and that's purposeful. I want to stay connected to my audiente. All right. We make sure we have a court jester or a centurion marching behind us saying, remember, sire, all fame is fleeting. All victories are fleeting. Remember, all faster though the laurel grows, it dies much quicker than the rose. All fame is fleeting. And I would remind myself, if I was knighted of the realm, and let's remember that Brian has won a knighthood. Okay, that's important. Somebody who also won her knighthood at the exact same time. I don't know that she's called a knight. Is she called a knightress or a whatever? A royalty playa is Mary Quant. Tom, do you know who Mary Quant is? Yes or no?
No.
Yes, you do. She invented the miniskirt. So, Brian. Mama, ooh. Didn't mean to make you cry. Amazing. You have moved mountains. You have filled rivers. You've caused us to weep, cry, laugh, and celebrate with you. Come on, together, Tom. Whoa, 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 whoa. Look at that chick in the miniskirt. Just remember, that shit is fleeting. I'm going to go talk to her.
Roth Show. You're experiencing the Roth Show. Never before in your life have you ever felt so filthy.